Winner's Edge. One of the great tributes of the Winner's Edge is the fact that winners have focus. Winners focus on results. They have specificity. When I talk to young people all throughout the world, I say that specificity rules the world. Why? Because the mind isn't vague. The mind is the most marvelous biocomputer ever created. It deals in numbers and parameters, and it deals in time segments. It doesn't deal in being happy. What will make you happy? It doesn't deal on being rich. What will make you rich? Providing what service that people want. In other words, where's your focus? Now, here's the situation. You want to be in the spotlight? You want to be in the limelight? Are you a searchlight? You want the floodlight? If you do, get a laser. Because the laser will put the energy all together and focus with such intensity that it cuts right through it. It won't tolerate any distraction from the focus. You and I need laser focus. The reason most people don't reach their goals is they never really set them in the first place. People spend more time planning Christmas or a vacation than they do their lives. They don't understand that the mind is target-seeking by design, and that there's a little part of the brain that we used to talk about often. It seems to be forgotten today. It's called the reticular activating system. Speakers used to talk about it, give seminars on it, but it's about the size of a quarter of an apple. So I call it your Macintosh or Apple iPod inside. You download information to it. It screens out everything that is consistent or isn't consistent with what you are obsessed with. And here's the way it works. As you go to do something, the reticular says, is this dangerous or non-dangerous? It doesn't care whether it's false or true. It just wants to know if it's dangerous or not dangerous or something you really believe in. In other words, the reticular activating system is your monitor. It screens out everything unimportant to you and focuses in on everything important. Let me give you an example. Let's say that you need a new washer dryer. Your washer dryer has just gone kaput. Your washer dryer doesn't work, so what does your reticular say? You want a washer dryer? Let's go look for washer dryers. And no matter what you try to concentrate on, until you get the washer dryer, your reticular won't let you sleep. It focuses on everything. It's going to be another lousy day. The reticular will find a reason for it to be lousy. I don't think this is going to be a good seminar or program. It will find a way to make you bored. It will always give credit to that which is your most dominant thought. And that's why I'm very careful to tell my reticular activating system what I want, specifically what I'm looking for, in detail, so that it can get the information plugged into my little biocomputer here and screen out all the naysayers, all the negative news, every reason why I shouldn't make it, and focus me completely on what I want. I call it the POW. The POW for me is prisoner of work, prisoner of wishes, could be Prince of Wales, could be power of women, could be putting on weight, could be psychology of winning, perception, beholder, dominant thought. I gave a gold-standing seminar at Circular Tables. They all paid $179 to come. And I thought that I would give them this workbook and they would work and work on their goals. And it was fairly simple. I said, what's your greatest personal and professional talent? What do you need to improve most personally and professionally? In 1976, how much money will you make? What will be improved in your life and by how much? And 5 years from now, that would be 1980, where will you be? What will you be doing? What will you have accomplished in 5 years? And then I ask them the $64,000 question. 20 years from now, 75 and 20 is 95, in 1995, where will you be living? What will you be doing? What will be the state of your health, and what will you have accomplished? Well, they groaned and they moaned, and it was very difficult. And this little boy, Eric, redheaded, freckle-faced, erudite, too smart for his years, a little bit, if you will, argumentative. He came up to me and he said, Dr. Wortley, how come you're not working on your goals? I said, who's this kid? I said, I don't have to work on my goals because I am the professor. I'm the teacher. He said, that's not a very good role model, sir. If you're a good role model, you would be working on your goals to set an example for us. I said, who brought you? He said, my dad brought me. He said, you're a PhD, piled high and deep, phony doctor, one of those doctors that doesn't do any good for people. I said, yeah. He said, they're not really working on their goals, Dr. Wortley. I said, it's Wortley, please. He said, they're really talking about what they're going to have for lunch, playing golf. They're not really serious about what you're doing. I said, they should be, because it's their life that they're planning. It's their life, not a game. He said, can I play? I said, you can play. I'll let you play, Eric. You take this workbook. You go and work on what you're doing, strength, weakness, next year, 5 years from now, 20 years from now. You go. I got rid of him. Are you kidding? This kid was trouble. And he made me feel bad because I wasn't working on my own goals. And then after it was all over, he came back up to the stage and he taught me more about goal setting than I had taught the whole class. What Eric taught me is that even when you're young, that young, you can have these dreams and aspirations that are very specific. But I brought him up to the stage to humiliate him and ended up being embarrassed for all of us grown-ups. We probably had watched the evening news too much. Maybe we had watched the bad news, and maybe we gave up on it. But the truth is, this 10-year-old boy stood up with a microphone in his hand as if it were a snow cone, and he said, go ahead, hit me with the questions, Doc. And I said, let me ask you this, Eric. What's your greatest strength? He said, make and model airplanes. I said, what's your greatest weakness? He said, my sister and my room. It looks like the Wrath of Khan. I said, let me ask you this, Eric. Next year, what will you be doing? How much money will you make next year? He said, I'll be 11. I said, brilliant. How much money? He said, $587 mowing lawns and shoveling snow. I said, why? He said, to go to Hawaii, to the Big Island, to snorkel on a Super Saver United fare and hope my parents make enough money for their tickets. I said, 5 years from now. He said, I'll be 15. I said, brilliant. I know you'll be 15. He said, I'll be in the 10th grade. I'll be studying math and science. I'll be ready, getting ready for the Air Force Academy, because I'm going to go there and be an Air Force pilot. And then they have a shuttle, and it's going to be a space shuttle, but right now it's just on the drawing board, and I made a model of it. And I'm going to fly the shuttle and deliver satellites into space like UPS or FedEx. And I'm going to do that because that's what I want to be, an astronaut. And so I'm going to train when I'm 15. I said, what if your eyes aren't good enough? He said, I eat carrots. My eyes are going to be good enough. I said, what about 20 years from now? He said, 20 years from now, let's see. I said, you'll be 30. What will you be doing? He said, I'll be an astronaut. I'll be in outer space. And I will be doing what I want because I love model airplanes and I like math and science. Well, it was too much for us. He had specific goals at age 10, but we knew that he was just young. And he didn't really know what was going to happen to him with the economy, with the interest rates, and with what's going on in the world. But I can't tell you what happened to me that day when I was shaving. I was shaving, looking in the mirror, watching the Today Show. And at that time, Willard Scott was still on there, usually looking for people 100 years of age or more. And sure enough, there was a 100-year-old man. He was actually 102. On the show. Name was Smith. Mr. Smith, I notice you're watering your flowers, your orchids, your night-blooming cirrus, and your cymbidiums and everything. Excuse me, sir, we don't mean to be rude, but you're getting water all over the cables, and it's $100,000 a minute. How do you live so long? He said, boy, this little baby won't come up for about a month, and this one will come up next summer. What was the question? How do you live so long, sir? He said, "Who will take care of my flowers?" I thought about buying a redwood tree seedling that day so I could tend my flowers and have a purpose. And then it happened. On the news, an astronaut came out of the belly of the space shuttle on a tether and pulled the satellite back into the bay of the space shuttle. I nearly cut my throat with my razor. I said, "Whoa, that's Eric. Oh, my gosh." I ran out to my family. "That's the young boy 20 years ago who I helped achieve his great goals of becoming an astronaut." My family looked at me and said, "What you've been doing for the last 20 years?" And then there was my daughter, Dana. She had been to that seminar and sat in the front row and watched that 10-year-old boy and said to me, "Is it really true? If you see what you want and visualize what you want and obsess what you want, that eventually you'll get it?" And I said, "Yes, you will." The next day, she dragged a chain around the backyard. "Come along, boy. Heel. Good dog." I said, "There's nothing on the end of that chain. And the neighbors think we're weird because I mow the lawn in my flight suit. You better get in the backyard and play because it's better than talking to an empty chain." She said, "That's my dog." I said, "You don't have a dog. And one thing about goals, honey, you'll learn is your dad has to be involved in a dog goal as well as a real goal." She said, "But you said," I said, "I know what I said, but we got new furniture, a new rug, and we're not going to get a dog, honey." The next day she had a brush. She bought it with her allowance. The next day there was a book on the care and feeding of Malamutes. No matter what I did, I came down early in the morning and tripped on this big dish with lead weights and hurt my toe. "What's that?" She said, "It's chemo's dish." I said, "Who would chemo have been had you gotten him, which you won't?" She said, "He's chemo, short for chemosabe. Means Indian friend. You'll love him. He's an Alaskan Malamute. He has a white diamond on his forehead, and he's got little laughing blue eyes. He's got a mouth that laughs, and his tail is curved. You've got little legs." I said, "Go to Denver and pull a sled. We live in Southern California. Honey, we can't have a dog. They smell." She said, "They have excellent noses. You're exactly right." The next day was Father's Day. It had been a setup all along. I came down on Father's Day with 2 days' growth of beard in my pajamas and bathrobe, and I made the announcement. "Today is Father's Day. It's my day. I don't have to go to church today. You just bring me a Xerox copy of the sermon. I'm going to stay home with my beard and eat Count Chocula, Frankenberry, bananas, and cereal. Watch the baseball game on Father's Day while you go to church. Dad, don't you want to go for a drive on Father's Day after church?" "No, not today. It's my day." I began to eat my cereal and spit out a classified ad. "One American Kennel Club Malamute puppy. Last one in the litter, $500. Drive by today. Bring your dad." I said, "We're not going. Your mom put you up to this. I'm not buying that dog." "That's okay, Dad. Don't be blue. We're going to grow up just like you. Someday when you're old and gray, you'll want us to see you on Father's Day." "Sorry, Dad. We can't see. We're too busy watching TV." I said, "Don't give me the Harry Chapin cats in the cradle complex here. We'll go for a drive, I'll go to church with you, and then we'll look at the dog, but we won't buy the dog." Well, you know what happened? Little puffball rolls over, comes out and licks my shoes and pulls my pant leg. He knew who his master was. The dog cost $500. The fence cost $500. He came through the screen door, which was locked. He ate our lawn furniture. He ate my good slippers. He came through the screen door, which was locked. And I let him play in roughhouse on the floor, on the rug, when my wife was at the store. Being the last of the litter, he was probably hard of seeing. He was probably nearsighted. And he thought that the Canadian snow goose in the rug was a turkey. And he ate the center out of my wife's new Persian rug. And I got my fishing needle together and I sewed it back together and put some detergent on it and put a cordoned off area and sat there quietly when my wife came back from the store. She said, "What happened to my rug?" I said, "Nothing. We were just roughhousing on it and got a little soiled. Best you fix our supper." She said, I don't like the sound and the looks of that. And she vacuumed, and I heard from the other room a sucking sound. She sucked the center out of the rug. I said, it must be one of those Iranian rugs. She said, it's your dog did it. I said, it's not my dog. She said, you bought it. I said, she thought it. I'm just a conduit through which other people's goals flow. And the dog and I enjoyed a good time out in his house for a while, and I learned something. You get that specific about what you want, it's there. It's almost like getting the brochures and getting so excited about a vacation that you're there in advance. That's why I believe that specificity rules the world. And finally, as you get through this idea that children need goals, whether they're pictures on the refrigerator, whether they've gone to a job fair, whether you're planning a trip for next summer, whether they're putting part of their allowance away for something they really want, that the dreams that children have, the more specific they become, the more likely they are to be achieved. I think of Neil Armstrong, who we used to work with in the Apollo program. Neil Armstrong, the first person on the moon. Did you know what he said at the age of 12? I dreamed I'm going to do something important in aviation. And sure enough, the dreams of that little boy became the reality of an astronaut. And I think of Maggie Thatcher. Maggie Thatcher, the Iron Woman of England, the first Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, over her father's grocery store at an early age. Grocery store, she looks out the window and says, I'm going to do something important when I grow up to lead this country. Her father may have said, put another loaf on the shelf, Maggie. I don't know what you've been eating or what you've been thinking of, but that's the most far-fetched idea that a Thatcher has ever had. That dream of a little girl led her to become the Prime Minister of England. And I think of another Englishman, Andrew Lloyd Webber. You know Andrew Lloyd Webber, a little bit of Cats, a little bit of Evita, a little bit of the Phantom of the Opera. Well, what was he doing? At the age of 9, there he was with his little piano recital, his little cutouts, he pulled the curtains on his little cutouts thing and gave his parents his new little Broadway show at the age of 9. At the age of 9, he was beginning to visualize and imagine what would take place in his later life. I look at someone like Sandra Day O'Connor, the retired justice of the Supreme Court, the first woman justice of the United States Supreme Court. Did she just suddenly, through law, prepare herself to become a justice of the Supreme Court? No. When they were young, as pre-teenagers and teenagers, the family would take their family to visit the capitals, the state capitals of many of the cities. And as they would visit the state capitals, she would go into the Capitol building and see the way that state was run. And she decided that she would become a lawmaker when she was a teenager. As you look at your own life, as you look at the dreams of a child, understand something. Even Steve Cawthon. Do you remember Steve Cawthon? Do you remember when he was riding a bale of hay around in his yard? You remember he was riding that for all he was worth? You remember what his father said? Put that bale in the truck, Stephen. I don't know what you're thinking of. He said, I just won the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to win the Belmont Stakes and the Preakness. I'm riding the Triple Crown, Dad. You do that, son. Oh, you just dream away, son. And Steve Cawthon, at the age of 17, became the first young rider to win the Triple Crown and went on to become one of the greatest horsemen who moved to England. A little boy's dream, riding a bale of hay around his own yard. You know, as I think of the winner's edge, I can't think of anything more important than the statement that winners have focus. They have specificity. Oh, Cheshire Puss, would you tell me, please, which way I should go from here? Alice in Wonderland. Well, that all depends on where you want to go. Well, I really don't much care or know. Well, then any old road will take you there, answered the cat. Winners in the fire of winter begin to see in the embers their vision of the future. And then they imagine and they conceptualize and they plan. And the plans become action plans and priorities. And finally, they become goals that are fused as if they were an internal guidance system in a navigational guidance computer of a Patriot missile, making every correction necessary to hit the target that you've set, just out of reach, but not out of sight, as if they're monitoring every single step of the way on the currently dominant thought of the desired result. If you're going to do anything in life, do it with focus. And if you want to be in the floodlight, the spotlight, or the limelight, make sure your light is a laser focus with all the intensity placed on succeeding in one goal at a time. The winner's edge is making sure that you focus on the desired result.